Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's March 18th, 2014. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 in the Good Beer Seal in New York City. We've got a great show for you tonight. We've got a new brewery from Queens, Finback, and an old friend, Clay Gordon, from Discover Chocolate, who will do some chocolate and beer pairings, and Dave from Urban Oyster, who's going to talk about some new brewery tours. So New York City Beer Week was a couple weeks ago, and we've all recovered. But, you know, there's more breweries opening than ever in New York City. And first, Dave from Urban Oyster, you do some great tours in New York. You're kicking off with a tour of New York City breweries. Tell us some of the breweries that you're visiting.
So, yeah, we launched just this a couple weeks ago during Beer Week, and we're going eventually to all 14 breweries that are operating in New York City limits. So every week, every Saturday, we're going to run a different tour. Every tour is going to go to different breweries. So, for example, this Saturday, we have a tour lined up. We're going to Paulaner Brauhaus in Manhattan, Six Point Craft Ales. We're going over to Dirk the Norseman / Greenpoint Beer and Ale Company in Greenpoint, and then finishing up at 508 Gastro Brewery with Chris and his beers. So.
All right. So how did you well, tell us about your background. You've done a lot of tours, beer tours around the city.
Yeah, Urban Oyster, we got started back in 2009, and our very first tour was about beer. It was all about the history of beer in New York, particularly in Brooklyn, with our Brewed in Brooklyn tour. And it just was celebrating the great beer city that New York was and is becoming again. So that was a walking tour, really history-focused. It's still our most popular tour. And off that tour, we've become really enamored with the craft beer scene here and built other tours off of that as well, and also see ourselves as a partner of the craft brewers in New York City in terms of getting word out, getting people to drink local, which is what we're all about, drinking and eating local, and exposing both locals and visitors to the great beer scene that is exploding here in New York, absolutely.
So the Dirk the Norseman Greenpoint Ale, they just opened up.
Last week, literally.
And you brought us some beer. What did you bring us?
So I stopped by there on the way over.
And cheers, guys.
Cheers. And Chris, the head brewer there, poured me their English Mild, which is very good. It's very refreshing. It got a nice nutty, caramely flavor to it. But I think what was most significant for me was it's 2.9%. And as a beer historian, I kind of got excited about that because that used to be how they made beer back in the 1800s when people drank beer all day long. When people drank beer for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, they were drinking 2.9% beer. So I'm hopeful we can get back to those days with this one. So it's tasty, though.
So you're kind of a beer historian now, too,
mm-hmm.
aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the coolest parts of New York City for beer history?
Oh, my God. There's so much beer history in New York. People don't know this. You know, we always talk about Babe Ruth as one of the greatest New Yorkers ever, and the Yankee Stadium was the house that Ruth built. Well, really, it was Jacob Rupert, who was a brewer, who used his beer money to purchase Babe Ruth from the Boston Red Sox, and he's the one that built Yankee Stadium. So it was a brewer behind that, so that's great beer history. There's a lot of old brewery buildings still scattered around the city today. We go to a few on our Brewed in Brooklyn tour. There's one just not too far from here, over on Bushwick Place and Meserol Street, the old Otto Huber Brewery, that is soon going to be home to a new operating bar, beer bar itself, The Well. So there's a lot of beer history. And some of it is right under people's feet, and they don't realize it. You know, I don't know if the people living at Schaefer Landing know that Schaefer Landing is named for Schaefer Beer Brewery that was there before they put up those luxury condos, and there's still one building left with this great frieze of this hand holding a chalice of beer that's on Kent Avenue. That's just a spectacular piece of beer history.
You know, when he's talking about beer, he's smiling. You know, he loves it. I've used to do some tours in the East Village at Jimmy's Number 43, so I've known you for a few years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, you've done a lot for beer, and So it's inevitable that you and I were going to work together, I think. So.
Well, cheers, man.
Cheers for that.
Well, okay, so your tour is coming up on Saturday. How does the tour work? So I buy online? Do I just show up and
Yeah, you can go to... No, you don't just show up. That won't work for you. You got to buy in advance. You can go to urbanoyster.com. We also just launched a couple of new sites, NYCBreweryTour.com and NewYorkBeerTours.com. You go to any of those sites, you can go onto our system, reserve your tickets. We got 5 tickets left for Saturday's tour. The tours will run every Saturday, the public tours, or you can book a private tour. And if you want to book a private tour, you just email us through the website, and we can set it up any day of the week, really. So,
I mean, we got Clay Gordon's here, Discover Chocolate. Mm-hmm. Clay, you want to pair a chocolate with this mild ale?
I've been sitting here drinking the beer and tasting chocolate in the background.
And you're not sharing with us.
Well, it takes a while to figure this stuff out and know what's going on. One of the things that is sort of counterintuitive for a lot of people is using milk chocolate and pairing with beers. Now, particularly if you get a sort of an English pale ale style, which is very creamy, very warmy, very yeasty and bready, milk chocolate goes with that as well. But I have a chocolate from a craft chocolate maker down in Asheville, North Carolina, called French Broad. And the beans come from Nicaragua. But the flavor profile that the maker, Dan Radigan, puts on this chocolate has to do with notes of caramel and burnt toast and butter and things like that. And in thinking about that and thinking about this beer, the one from Eric and the, not Eric, I'm thinking Eric the Norseman, of course.
Right.
That's the first thing that comes to mind.
We got it on the brain now.
Thinking about that and going with this beer, which has got this nutty flavor going to it. It's soft. And beer and chocolate go together, in my opinion, one of the reasons why it's easier to work with beer and chocolate as opposed to wine and chocolate has to do with the texture of the head of the beer. So you get warm and creamy and soft. That texture goes extremely well with the texture of chocolate.
But it tastes good.
And it tastes good as well. I mean, it's a great thing about it is that it's a win-win all the way around. Now, some things work better than others, and that's something we're going to be exploring this evening at Jimmy's because, you know, we leave here and we go straight to your place, and we're doing a 4 beers and 4 chocolates this evening as an exercise in learning how to pair. And that's going to be very, very interesting because I looked at the beer list this morning. I haven't actually tasted any of the beers yet. I've tasted the chocolates. It's going to be fun to figure out how to put all the things together and make them work for this evening.
Well, it's great. And thanks for being on the show. Throughout the show, as we taste different beers, Clay's going to taste us on some chocolates. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
You could do this at home, too.
I do.
What do you buy, like 10 different chocolates and go nuts?
You know, I'm very, very lucky in the sense that I don't actually ever really buy chocolate except when I'm doing a tasting for large people. I'll just show up at home one day and, oh, there's a package in front of my door because the postman or the UPS guy or FedEx guy has, oh, there's a box of chocolate that somebody has just sent me. It's a great – I mean, you can't really do that with beer. It's like, ooh, I'm just shipping beer. I've got a bottle of beer sitting on my front doorstep. But with chocolate, it happens all the time. So I came back from a trip in October. I was gone for 3 weeks in London and Amsterdam, Milan and Paris. And I think I had 60 bars of chocolate that I came back with, most of which were gifted to me by friends of mine in the chocolate business.
So let's have more chocolate.
Yeah, let's have more chocolate.
All right. And our other special guests, we got Basil and Kevin, who are the founders of Finback Brewery, which when you guys opened up, it was pretty exciting. But I remember we had an event at Jimmy's number 43. Welcome to the show.
Hey, great.
First, let's toast you guys. Well, you know, you're not even the newest brewery in New York City anymore. I mean, isn't that crazy? So, Dave, you said they were actually – you guys were open in time for New York City Beer Week. What did you say – what was the response to Finback at the opening night in New York City Beer
these
Week?
These guys had a huge line at their table. Their double sesh beer was what everyone was raving about all night long. We were at the table across the hall from you guys, so we got a lot of people coming over from Finback just telling us how great their beer was. So
let's start. I'd like to, because you guys are a new brewery. There's so many new breweries in the last 6 months that have opened in New York. What was the process for you guys? I know you guys were award winning home brewers. So how did you go from that to opening a brewery?
Yeah, I think the process for us was really, you know, kind of getting the beer bug a long time ago, home brewing and having a great time doing that and just being really engaged. There's a great home brewing community in New York City. And I think we had this kind of crazy dream at some point, which was really just like, let's open a brewery. Let's take it to the next step. And that was about 3.5-4 years ago. And we've really been kind of plugging away for that long. It took that long to make it work. You know, looking at spaces took a long time. We actually, you know, really interestingly enough, we probably, between Kevin and I, the both of us together, we probably saw 40 spaces, you know, all over the city, mostly Brooklyn, Queens. And we had a great building that we thought we were going to be in, and it was the old, it was on the old Rheingold site. And so when you talk about, you know, the history of New York City brewing, it really does kind of connect through. But in the end, we ended up in Queens. We're in a great spot. It's in Glendale, which is basically Ridgewood. And it's a big space, and we ended up there because we thought it would let us do a lot of the things that we wanted to do having space. You know, we're going to barrel age, we're going to do some sour beers, and really just doing a kind of interesting tasting room concept, and having that space is going to be really, really great for us to kind of do things.
What do you guys have things like? What other things you're looking for, like parking or loading docks, or what are some of the things you look for when you're looking for a brewery?
Sailing height is really important. Out of all the buildings we saw, that was one of the biggest issues with sailing height, drainage, and then the size of the space as well. Originally, we were only looking for 5,000 square feet, but ended up with 13,000 square feet, and that's definitely better for us because now we can expand and do more things.
Great. You know, and Dave, for you, you know, you've been visiting a lot of breweries and things. So what are some questions you might have for these guys?
Well, that's a great question. I think the
on the spot.
You know, one of the tricks of doing a brewery tour is asking different questions at each brewery. So I think one of the questions I always like to ask is what's the difference as you guys have transitioned from being home brewers into being commercial brewers? What's been the biggest difference for you in that transition?
Definitely scaling up the recipes. That was something, you know, that we're still getting used to, and still trying to dial in into our new system.
Yeah, and I think also it's for me, a lot of it was just like, you know, the core of it, the kind of heart of it, is very similar, right? The concept and the passion, it's all pretty much the same. But it's kind of like just the scale of everything. And for us right now, because, you know, we're still fitting out the space, we're still basically, originally we planned to have everything done, you know, step by step. And then in the end, they all kind of collapse together, and we're kind of doing everything at once. And so, you know, we launched in January, but, you know, the tasting room's still not done, so we're building that out. You know, little pieces of equipment aren't done, so we're doing that. And so trying to do, in some ways, everything at once has been the challenge and the kind of reward of it, right? And so we're running around all the time trying to do just a million things at once.
And did you guys do some innovative fundraising? How'd you come up with the money?
So most of it, you know, we really wanted to, you know, part of it was really just that we wanted to keep it pretty closed. So we went through friends and family. We got kind of investment through friends and family. And then we worked really hard, met with probably every bank in New York City. And luckily, someone gave us a loan. And so we got a small business loan to kind of make up the difference. And then we also did, you know, a Kickstarter campaign, which was for us really about, you know, we had pretty much all the money we needed to at least, you know, bare bones wise to like open the brewery. But we wanted to raise some money to get our sour program up and running. And so, you know, to buy barrels, to buy some extra equipment, to get a fooder. And so we did a Kickstarter campaign, which was really awesome because people just want to support local breweries and just having that kind of community aspect to really kind of bring people in early on was great to us. And that, you know, and still people, you know, they kind of send us emails, keep in touch, you know, people who support us in Kickstarter. And it's kind of like this immediate community that you can tap into, which was awesome.
You know, I also saw you have the program, the Community Supported Beer. Like, that sounds cool. Community supported beer. How did you come up with that?
You know, it was just like CSAs, which you know, they're cooler and cooler CSAs. I saw a fish CSA or a seafood CSA 2 years back, and I just thought that was the greatest idea.
A friend of mine in Portland, Oregon, does an ice cream CSA. She used the money in her first year to actually buy all the equipment necessary to make the ice cream, and now she, that's how she supports herself through the summer.
I think that is awesome. So I would that's a CSA I would get. You know, I love ice cream, and I think and beer and ice cream are awesome too. But yeah, exactly. And it was another way for us to, you know, we have a big space. You know, the community in the area, it's like very residential where we are, and people were just really interested in kind of, hey, when are you opening? What's going on? How can we get growlers? And so again, it was like another way for us to just kind of figure out how to get some money in the door and cash flow, but also to like kind of involve people, and so they feel part of us and we feel, you know, part of the community, and I thought, you know, it's just kind of a fun thing to do.
All right. And I know I've tried a few of your beers, the Double Sass, the IPA, the Porter, but you've got some new beers. What is this red beer? It's really good.
This is a red IPA.
I'm going to have a refill, too. This is pretty good.
We call this Marduk. It's 6.8.
Marduk?
Yeah. It's named after the Babylonian sun god.
Yeah.
Yeah. but it's 6.8%. It's not a rye IPA. It's just red. We used Crystal 75 and chocolate to give it that deep red color. It's a
so you're not afraid to say what malt you used?
No, not at all.
Some brewers won't tell you.
We're not those brewers. Yeah. I'll tell you everything.
But is that a part of the homebrew ethic, you think? People who come out of that?
Yeah, maybe. Because I think we still have that homebrew mentality.
Absolutely.
You know, we're really close to all our brewing buddies, you know, professional homebrewer alike. And, you know, we're always experimenting and doing different things.
Try this chocolate over here. Rather than the first chocolate.
So what chocolate? What chocolate goes with the red?
Well, you know, this is IPAs are always really very difficult to do because you've got this, you know, this piney resinousness. You've got, you know, often some fruit associated, grapefruit or something similar like that. And what I have here is a 65% chocolate. It's from a grower in Davao in the Philippines who also makes chocolate from his own beans. This is a friend of mine through the Chocolate Life, which is this community that I run, and I met him here in New York a couple of months ago, or actually in San Francisco in January when he was at a trade show. And he said, "Here are some of my bars. Float it. You know, tell me what you think." And so there's something about this that what it does is sort of mellows the hoppiness of this. So it just really cuts that sharp edge and pulls it down. And for people who are often for people who, you know, they like hoppy beers, but sometimes it's just a little bit over the top for them. Sometimes throwing some chocolate in the mix will tame it just a little bit and provide this wonderful complementary flavor.
That's
connection.
Nice. Yeah. But for you guys, for real, like, you know, Kevin and Basil, I mean, you don't have any secrets, any secret recipes, you know. I mean, that Double Sass is pretty good. I mean, was that one of your homebrew recipes?
It was. That's something we've been doing for a while. And, you know, kind of it was born from, you know, I used to travel actually to China pretty often for my day job. And we, you know, I always wanted to, you know, look for other things that we could brew with. And so I would walk through the markets and just look at spices and things like that, and got Szechuan peppercorns, brought them back. And just experimented with it, and you know, and we tried to build something that was, you know, a wit that was dry, a little bit unique, and so it's got Szechuan peppercorns, some ginger, and it just kind of, you know, I think it's not cloying, it's not, you know, it's not too witty for some people, and you know, but it's still kind of fun
sounds
to
like
drink,
a,
you know,
it sounds like a fabulous pairing beer, just generally.
Yeah.
If you think about the ginger and the Szechuan peppercorn and the other things that are going on in there, I can just start imagining some of the flavors that it goes with. Right. It'll be a lot of fun to play with that way.
For sure. Actually, I just want to make one point. I think that was a great question, which is like, is that from the kind of homebrew ethic that you mentioned? And I think that's something that is really what we're about, you know. And I think that we've talked to a lot of our friends who are, you know, again, the New York City homebrewing community is just really, really very collaborative and really nice and supportive. And, you know, all these people, we were kind of the first to open a brewery out of that group in some ways. And people are, you know, oh, can we contract brew or can we do something? And our interest has been, you know, or we've been kind of thinking about doing something. We don't have a name for it yet, but maybe something called like Finback Lab or something, where it was like really kind of bringing in our buddies and being able to do what we did before, which is to put our heads together, kind of bring something unique to the table that's more than the sum of its parts.
Right. And I want to make the ultimate. I want to make the ultimate chocolate pairing beer with you guys.
Yeah. Absolutely.
If you open it up, I'm there.
Okay. Great.
Well, I think something we should point out about these guys, and you guys could speak to this too, is that, you know, and this has been a problem historically too, is New York is a tough city to open a brewery in. There's a lot of expenses, a lot of red tape, and one of the reasons we've lagged behind other cities like Denver and San Diego and Portland is because of the sheer expense and obstacle in opening a physical brewery. So every physical brewery that opens up like these guys really opens up a world of opportunity, not just for them, but for everybody, and it's an important investment for the community. I think it's worth noting.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's great. And I tell you what, that's a great – we're going to come back after this break, and we're going to talk more about that. Thanks, David, and thanks to our sponsors, GreatBrewers.com. They bring you a lot about beer community. All right. All right, we'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. Okay.
Today's music is by Hard Bodies on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Like good beer. Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, GreatBrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. GreatBrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile beer cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit GreatBrewers.com today.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're out here at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, hanging out with Finback Brewery and Urban Oyster and Discover Chocolate. And you can tweet everybody, just go at something, at Discover Chalk, at Finback Brewery, at Urban Oyster, and at beer_sessions. Just a little bit of beer news I want to throw out there. A couple weeks ago, our good friends Wendy Littlefield and Don Feinberg, they sold their portfolio of Van Bergen DeWolf to Total Beverage. So that's a little change in the beer world. It's great. They've done such a great job of over 30 years building their brands from Saison DuPont and so many others that we love. And I want to give a shout out to Wendy and Don. Great job. Congratulations. And in New York, we just met the rep, Mike Battaglia, who's taking over with Total Beverage. They're going to have the same brands out there, a different importer. But just congratulations to you, because, you know, we all talk about starting businesses and everything. And to be able to build an import portfolio over 30 years, and it's just great that people respect what you're doing. Don and Wendy, congratulations, and thanks so much for all you did for the beer community. All right, so Dave from Urban Oyster, he was just asking a question. Finback Brewery, one of the newest breweries in New York City. Dave, what was your question again? They must have a tough time opening breweries. Is that what you're saying?
It's tough to open a brewery in New York, so I'd love to hear these guys talk about what it took to do this, because it's no easy task. And one of the reasons that we've lagged behind Denver and Portland, places like that, is that it is so expensive to make beer. It's also why the historic breweries closed, too. So, you know, it's still a relevant thing to talk about. So it'd be good to hear from you guys about how you faced that and overcame it.
Well, I think on the regulatory side, I think that New York State and New York City in general have really been supportive. I think they've really gotten behind just the kind of brewery, cidery, kind of beverage community and helped out and really see it as a both an asset in terms of revenue and tourism to the state. So the you know the whole farm kind of brewery or farm cidery license I think was a great thing, and that's a way to support both the kind of host, the manufacturers of beer and cider, but also you know the growers and trying to really build up you know local kind of hop farms and maltsters and local kind of suppliers to these things, which has been great. And then I think you know like you said the cost is the biggest kind of hurdle I'd say you know. New York is, when we were looking for space, you're competing with people who want to develop condos out of run-down warehouses. And so that you know that was a big thing, right? And you can't compete, or a bar for that matter. You know, we're a manufacturing business, right? It's a factory, and you can't compete with a bar or a luxury condo. And then even just things like getting deliveries in New York, you know, simple things are always, you know, things that you have to think more about and coordinate about. And so all of these things kind of add up. But I think we always knew we wanted to be in New York City. You know, originally it was in Brooklyn, but Queens, any borough, you know, we feel like New York City is where we want to be. It's where we want to live. It's where we want to kind of be a part of the culture here. And that was so important. And I think that ultimately, even if you could, you know, New Jersey's not that far, but New York City is New York City.
Kevin, you want to say anything? He just shook his head. He's awesome. Well, the next brewery is the smoke porter. It's the Puffin smoke porter. So when did you come up with that recipe, and why the name Puffin?
Well, it's a smoke porter, so I thought it was kind of funny that, you know, we called it the Puffin. But
did you think of the bird, or is it? No reference to the bird.
Is it puffing like smoke?
Puffing yeah, smoke. Like smoke.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Okay.
It's a play on words.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's a simple beer. It's 6.8%, you know, lots of chocolate, some black malt, a little roast, just a little bittering hops. But,
no, it's not. And especially just out of your little growler, it was real smoky on the first, you know, smell. Mm-hmm. Clay, you have a chocolate for smoky beers.
You know, actually, at this point, what I would say is that there are some smoky chocolates out there in the world. It's generally considered to be a defect. What happens is that the beans are dried over fires, and the smoke flavor gets absorbed by the cocoa butter. Now, I don't actually have one of those today. If I'd known you were doing a smoked beer, I would have brought one of them. There's a French chocolate.
So you have defective chocolates.
Well, it's generally considered to be a defect, but it's one of those things where sometimes it really works. There's a French chocolate maker by the name of Stéphane Bonnat, who works with beans from Indonesia, and he's got three dark milk chocolates. So they're 65% chocolates, but they contain milk, right? And all of them are from Indonesia. So they're from the same general geographic area, but all of them have this slight flavor smoke profile, but they're all milks. But what I have here is another French chocolate. It is a milk chocolate. And what happens here again is we're looking to complement the smokiness here. What doesn't happen, unfortunately, because this chocolate was really not made for it, is that there is a little bit of this.
David from Urban Ice just took two pieces of chocolate. So I took two pieces.
We you know, there's no need to apologize for, you know, taking all that chocolate. We applaud the instinct to go. But the bittering, what happens for me is that the chocolate goes well with the smoked flavor of the beer. But what happens is you've got the bitter on the back end, which comes through afterwards, and I think that if there was a smoky chocolate, it would go better with the bittering on the back end of the beer. But it's a nice flavorful combination. You know, it's like some people will say you know white chocolate isn't chocolate, or milk chocolate isn't chocolate. You've got the movie Sideways, where the Paul Giamatti character says, if anybody orders Merlot, I'm leaving, right? There's the stigma against certain kinds of chocolates. Is this the same kind of stigma about certain kinds of beers? Like, it's a light beer. If you like light beer, you're not really a beer lover or something like that? I mean, I don't know.
I think there definitely is. I think for me, there isn't, right? I think that you know, you think about, and in anything, right, there's a, you know, people have preconceived notions and kind of they come at it, whether it's because they really feel that way or whether it's because they think they should feel that way.
I think it's because you have mass producers in all industries. So you have mass produced beer, mass produced chocolate, mass produced whatever. And and for whatever reason, the mass producers went with sweet milk chocolates. So, and the same thing in the U.S. is like the mass producers went with this light American lager.
Do you know why the mass producers went with sweet milk chocolate?
I do not.
Cheap.
Oh yeah,
sugar is cheaper than cocoa. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
And right. Milk is which is actually why the brewers went with light lagers too. It was cheaper to make those beers. You know. Yeah. So, but I mean, you know, it has scared people away. It has scared craft brewers away from making a good craft brewed light lager. And it's sort of like one of those gaping holes in the craft beer industry that there isn't.
You know, I just got in today I got a delivery of Bell's Lager something, Lake Lager. And I haven't tried it yet, but I don't know if anyone has tried. If anyone is a fan of Bell's, Twitter us at @beer_sessions and let me know, is the Lake Lager good? Because I got one keg and I'm going to put on draft this week.
Yeah, but I think a lot of craft brewers are scared to make that beer because there's this association with mass production. So.
Well, and in the craft chocolate world in the United States, there aren't a whole lot of milk chocolates coming out of the craft chocolate world, which is a travesty because when they're done well, they're fabulous.
Yeah. I like all chocolate. Let's get more specific. Okay, so Kevin and Basil, you guys are – it's Basil or Basil?
It's Basil.
I have problems with pronunciation. But you guys have a brewery. What did you guys do today? Tell us like what you did because I want to know exactly what you guys do.
Today we're actually replacing the floor drains.
Yeah, it was not that interesting of a day, but basically...
Well, that's interesting. So why did you have to replace the floor drains?
So these are some of the headaches of trying to open a brewery. Basically, we had a drain, and you know, I think sometimes, let's say people... certain things weren't done right the first time, and so we had to go in and make sure it was done right the second time. And so, you know, we're almost done with it.
So what goes down the drain, though? Like wastewater or what?
Wastewater, you know, wort, lots of, you know, just... I mean, most of it, lots of water. You know, you're cleaning all day long. You're basically... I mean, that's most of it. You're cleaning. So it's just a ton of water. Beer, you know. Well,
here's the thing about I know our friends Wandering Star, when they were first trying to open their brewery in Massachusetts, each different city had different requirements for, you know, where their wastewater would go. Did you have that issue in New York, or you just have an existing commercial drain? And
we have an existing commercial drain, and it goes into the municipal sewers. I mean, I think for us, and you know, at least my understanding, you know, all of the kind of our scale breweries in New York, and even the largest breweries, I mean, we're all relatively small. And the amount of wastewater in the grand scheme of things compared to other kind of industries, other kinds of manufacturing, is relatively innocuous and relatively kind of the sewer system here is equipped to handle it. But I know that in certain other places where the sewer system, the infrastructure is not as well kind of built, let's say, and there are other more concerns where people would have to, you know, have holding tanks or, you know, or things like that, or if you're in more kind
so
of
like
sensitive.
The pH has to be a certain.
Right, exactly.
So how do the holding tanks work? I think it's like the pH has to be a certain level before you can release it.
Yeah, so some of it is pH and kind of, you know, whatever's in the water, chemical compounds, things like that. But, you know, some of it is also just the speed. And so they don't want you to release X amount of water into the sewer at once. And so, you know, there's some smaller breweries I know in Long Island where it's just the sewer can't handle it. And so they hold it and then they have to release it at a slower rate throughout, you know, throughout the day or the week. So it's not like you're just, you know, sending thousands of gallons of water into the sewer.
So it's something that's an advantage of New York City, that there's great infrastructure. Sewer and water. And
yeah, I'd say at our scale. Yeah.
Do you guys treat your water at all?
When we, you know, for brewing, we do very little to it. We filter it. Mm-hmm. You know, we carbon filter it. You know, in terms of changing the chemistry of it, very rarely.
Yeah. I think that's one of the biggest things about New York is all the New York City breweries just drawing that New York City tap water, which is so good.
Yeah.
So what do you guys think the best style of beer that can be made with New York water? It's a general statement, but...
You know, I think it's so versatile. I mean, I'd say any, you know, an IPA, any ales. I mean, I think that those are really, you have no problems. You don't have to do anything. You know, with darker beers, you know, maybe you kind of adjust a little bit as necessary. But really, any of the kind of, you know, IPAs or most of the things that are a little lighter, you know, not as much your kind of dark malts, I think the water is ideal.
So maybe that with the water and some other the benefits in New York City, maybe New York City really is a great place to make beer. How about that?
Cheers.
All right.
Cheers to that.
You guys are making my day. Yes. And you're gonna make Urban Oasis tours even better. So hey, we'll take another short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
This one's called Jepson Creek by The Hollows. You're listening to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks to our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com, a comprehensive website aimed at bringing the beer community together. And if you want to tweet us at @beer_sessions, go for it. And at @Heritage_radio, there's all these things. But really, thanks, HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can become a member at any time. And there's a lot of special events coming up for members. So HeritageRadioNetwork.org, check it out. There's more than 20 shows, including a cheese show, which is one of my favorites, Cutting the Curd. And Michael Harlan Turkel's The Food Scene was just on earlier. So here we are, Beer Sessions Radio on, I call it the Food NPR. This is Heritage Radio Network. Most of the shows are about food-related, and it's worth checking out. All right, so we got Finback Brewery, we got Discover Chocolate, and we got Urban Oyster. So we're talking about they opened a new brewery in Queens before they talk about fixing the drains today. So day-to-day life of a brewer, what are you guys going to do tomorrow at work at your brewery, Kevin? Because he seems to be the guy that knows what's going on.
Tomorrow we're going to start some more work on the tap room, which I wish was done a few months ago. But we're going to try.
So, as part of the rollout, so you said you got the brewery open first, and now you're working on the tasting room.
Tasting room.
Now, how does that work license wise? Is that the same? It's part of the same brewery. You can have a tasting room. Yeah. Or is it a separate license?
Well, it's so basically you can have a tasting room. You know, the regulations are pretty clear in terms of what you can do serving tastings. You know, a lot of that is free tastings, and that's how a lot of breweries have done it. And then then it's a separate license if you want to do more of a kind of tavern on a brewery premises kind of thing. So then to do more tours and kind of bigger pours and things like that. But I think, for our day-to-day in terms of tomorrow, I think it's going to be, unfortunately, it's going to be attacking those drains again. But we're going to be, our day-to-day is we try to do sales once a week at least, which is so important and the thing that is the easiest for us not to do because we're just too busy. But, we brew once a week. We'll package usually about once a week. And then there's a lot of in between, which is trying to paint another wall, trying to put some legs on some tables, trying to figure out QuickBooks so that we can do our taxes before April 15th. And it's all these little things that, you're not doing when you're homebrewing, but you have to do when you open a business.
So with David's Urban Oysters, when would you guys be ready for his tour to visit your brewery?
I think we're on the schedule May 4th, is that right?
I think so, yeah. Start of May, yeah.
Yeah, and so we're going to be, even if we don't have every wall painted, we're definitely going to welcome the Urban Oyster crew. We're going to have beer ready to go. It's going to be cold and delicious, and we can, there's a lot to see. It may not be as pretty as we want, but I think we'll be ready, by April.
For years, we loved going to some of the good Brazil bars in New York. We always called them the tasting rooms for breweries. But now, with all the great breweries in New York City, it seems like that's the coolest thing to do, right? Go to a brewery and taste beer.
Well, hey, I mean, so many breweries are opening up. Queens and Brooklyn keep leapfrogging each other for the most breweries now. I mean, when these guys opened, they made Queens the biggest beer brewing borough, and just last week, Brooklyn tied them back again. So fierce competition going on. But, yeah, I mean, so many little breweries opening up. So many people in New York have no awareness of this either. So, you know, part of our mission is to get the word out and let people in New York know there are all these great little breweries opening up, and you can visit them, you can taste their beer, you can buy growlers, you can buy t-shirts, you can really engage and support them.
So you told us you have a tour every Saturday now, right, Dave?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So what's the tour for next Saturday? Which breweries are you visiting?
So actually next Saturday is canceled.
Oh, yeah.
But the following Saturday, I don't have my schedule in front of me, but we always start the tour and end it in Manhattan. So we've worked out a relationship with Paul Anner, the German brewery, who's opened a brew house on the Bowery. We start there, good German food, good German beer. And then we go to two outer borough breweries.
You guys have a bus.
Yep, we have a, like a little luxury van that we take out. And then we always end at 508 on the west side of Manhattan at 508 Gastro Brewery. But I don't know who April 5th is. I'm just sort of guessing here because...
Let's talk about Pollinger. That was a surprise to me. Walking down the Bowery and I saw Pollinger from Germany has opened a brew pub.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty cool. I mean, they're also part of like the New York City Brewers Guild. So even though they're from Germany, they're really a New York City brewery.
So Pollinger is one of the great historical breweries, founders of the Doppelbock style. I mean, there's so much history there behind Pollinger. Goes back to, you know, like a lot of German breweries, dates back to being an abbey for monks. But they have a brew house business, which has been big in Asia. So there's dozens of them through China, Australia, Southeast Asia. But this is their first North American brew house. And if you go there, all the beer they serve is made right there on the Bowery. They have a brewer on premises. All the beer, the really cool thing about all their beer is none of it's filtered. So it's going straight from the bright tanks right into the taps. So you don't think you can go out and get a Pollinger in a bottle in the store and have the same experience. I mean, this is fresh beer. It's really well made. The recipes are even slightly different to account for the different water.
It's kind of like the game's changing.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you guys think about that? I mean, you guys are local guys with a small brewery. What is that? How do you feel about international companies coming in and opening little brew pubs in New York?
I think it's great. I'm dying to go and check it out. Yeah, I mean, I think the more beer, the better.
Yeah, our friend Dan Paquette from Pretty Things was here last week, and the one thing he didn't get to do was he wanted to go to the Pollinger Brew House and actually see what equipment they used. So that was his question.
I heard it's pretty fancy.
Yeah.
And I heard it was all shipped, well, obviously shipped over here from, I think, Germany. And they actually had all the technicians come from Germany to install it. Because I think the guy who set up our boiler or something was the same guy who set up their boiler. And so we kind of got the inside scoop. But, I mean, I think it's great, too. I think that ultimately New York City it's a big city. There are like 25,000 bars and restaurants in the city or something like that.
Yeah, give or
you
take.
Know, give or take. And I think that, you know, people are ultimately, you know, there are a lot of craft beer drinkers, but they're more and more each day. I think people are discovering, you know, the difference, and they're demanding it, and they're...
You can go one day to a brew pub, one day to a bar, one day to a cocktail bar, one day to a restaurant.
Absolutely,
you know?
And we don't want everyone to drink.
New York's awesome, guys.
You know, right? We're preaching to the choir, but it's like, you know, I support all, you know, our buddies.
So how is it? So we know that the Pollinger guys, they definitely came in with a decent budget for a brew pub.
Yeah.
How is what they're building different than what you're making? In terms of equipment.
I haven't been in there yet, but
I can say, knowing both breweries, that Finback's brewery is larger. So the brewery over at Pollinger is fairly small scale, and it's never going to grow. It's only going to be in that space because they're only serving beer for the restaurant. So it's prettier at Pollinger. You know, like they got the copper kettles and everything. So, but I mean, literally their brewing tanks are in the middle of the restaurant, so it's got to be pretty. But other than that, I mean, it's the same stuff. I mean, it's a brew kettle.
People really make beer there. It's not just like a show. It's not just for show. Like, they actually are making beer there.
They're actually making beer there. Yeah. And you learn that on the tour. You meet the brewer, Andreas, who's a great guy. So, yeah.
That's exciting. I think more beer in New York City, right? Fresh beer is delicious beer.
Yeah.
I think New York is a huge untapped market. And what we're seeing now with all these breweries opening in the last year and a half is simply the realization of that untapped market, that you know, there are 8.5 million people living in the city of New York. A lot of them are beer drinkers. A lot of them drink Stella or Heineken or Corona or Bud. Even if they're craft beer drinkers, maybe some of them have been limited to Sierra Nevadas and you know, your founders and other out-of-state brewers were all great, but, you know, what we try to convert people to on our tours is drink local. And local is where it's at. The freshest beer is the best beer. We have all this great beer being made right inside the city limits. If you go outside the city limits within a 100-mile radius, there's a stunning amount of beer being made. So, I mean, we live in a great part of the country for beer.
And not only is it a stunning amount of beer, but the quality of the beer. I mean, I've been involved in this. I mean, Jimmy, I, you know, first came on to Beer Sessions 3-4 years ago, and that was my first real, you know, between you and the sessions that I was doing at Jimmy's with Kuzme and with Mary. I mean, just the range and the quality of stuff has improved so remarkably over the last couple of years. It's just really, really a testament just how hardworking. I mean, in the chocolate business, it's the same. It's the same kind of thing. You really do need to have, you know, 10,000 hours. You need to put in the effort. You need to have that experience. So, you know, we're now seeing on the worldwide chocolate scene all of these small craft chocolate makers in North America who've now been producing for 5 years. And that's your 10,000 hours. That's your 10,000 hours.
Damn.
And it's really, I mean, the quality of work that's being done here that I've seen as a judge at the International Chocolate Awards and places like that in the last year or two, it's just remarkable and astounding just how... You know, if the French will get down off their high horses saying...
But you think, like... Yeah. Do you think that chocolate and beer are a natural pairing? And it's... For pubs and restaurants, they should do chocolate and beer pairing?
It's a lot easier to do than wine.
It's an
wine.
Easy one.
It's a lot easier to do than wine. It's because you don't have... I mean, the part of it is that the fermentation profiles of chocolate and beer are much closer to each other. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Oh, that's awesome. And then for Kevin and Basil... So you guys, now that you have a small brewery, and I know that you've been in the beer scene for a while as home brewers. I know Josh Bernstein, he included you in some of his tours. So yep. You've been recognized as top home brewers for a while. But for our listeners, the places, what are the top places that you're targeting to sell your beer to in New York City? Because people like to come to New York and visit the beer bars.
And I think for sure, you know, I think, you know, we were super excited to be launching at your place, at Jimmy's, right? And that's definitely where we want to be, and places like that, right? I think every borough is seeing more and more great beer bars. In New York City, isn't it, you know, in the past few years, it's just...
Well, pick like five that are your accounts you're selling to, right?
All right. I would say Jimmy's, I think ABC Beer Company, yep. I think... Owl Farm in Brooklyn is great. I'd say not a beer bar, but Queens Kickshaw is a great place in Astoria. You know, just really fun list. Not a big list, and not a beer, not a bar, but just a great
list.
Great
food. Great
food.
To go with that beer, yeah.
And what else?
Drop off service.
Oh yeah, that'd
be
one
of my favorites. Yeah.
Great. So those are places that if you're coming to New York in the next few weeks, you'd be able to find Finley.
Yeah.
I know we have the IPA on now, and I'm sure we're getting a delivery this week from you guys. But some of the beers you tried tonight, so the red IPA, what's the name of it again?
Marduk.
The Marduk is great. So I'd had the Double Cess, the Smoke Porter, and the IPA. And now we're looking, you have the red coming out. And what are some of the other beers that are coming out in the next month that we can look forward to trying in New York City?
We have a Session IPA in the fermenter right now. And an Imperial Stout that was brewed with cacao nibs and coffee from a local coffee roaster.
And so, I think there's an interesting story that's called BQE. And the idea is that, you know, we the brewery is now in Queens. Kevin and I are both from Brooklyn. And so we took an ingredient from Brooklyn, which was the chocolate, and an ingredient from Queens from a local roaster.
Who was the chocolate maker?
It was Mass Brothers.
Oh, dude, that's fancy.
And then Native Coffee Roasters in Queens. They're small, but doing awesome stuff, really fun, interesting stuff.
All right. And Dave, want to add anything?
Well, you'll be able to visit their tour on our their brewery on our tours in May, so definitely check out
So it's what, UrbanOysters.com? That's the best way to go.
Yep, you can go on there and see the New York City Brewery Tour.
All right. And Clay, anything else going on with Discover Chocolate?
Tonight, we've got...
Jimmy's number 43. Jimmy's last week, you did a chocolate tasting at Burp Castle.
Yeah, I did something for Liquid Lent, which is this fabulous 40 Days of Beer in New York City. I was really, really happy to be able to kick off. It's fun. Whenever you walk into some place, you got a dozen beers you've never tasted before. You got a dozen chocolates in your bag, and you're trying to say, okay, which ones are going... with which beers. It's always a challenge. And you have, you know, 20 minutes before people are showing up, and let's make it go. So I'm looking forward to this evening coming up with some really original.
No,
really
you did a very beers. Unique format. So you have, you're doing first, you're doing what, three beers with one chocolate?
Yeah, we're doing, actually, we're going to start off doing three beers and one chocolate. It's really all about understanding how flavor changes. So if you if you taste the same beer with different chocolates, your perception of the beer and your perception of the chocolate will change. And then we're doing one beer and three chocolates. So we're doing the reverse of them. So we're doing four beers and four chocolates. And the idea is not to say, hey, I'm the expert here and these two things go together. You should taste the two things together. Yummy, yummy, yummy. Because I can guarantee you that with the list of beers that we're serving this evening, which is I mean, great list of beers, but it's all over the map in terms of styles. With the chocolates that I found, there are going to be some things which are more successful than others.
Awesome. Thanks, yep. Clay. And Finback, when is your taste room going to open? In 2014?
Definitely. That's the million-dollar question. I think we are our goal. We're going to open kind of growler hours for sure in April. And I think we're going to have the tasting room open by May, and we're gonna do a party and kind of some like an opening thing, and I hope it's gonna be early May, you know. And we've,
all right, well, yeah. I'll tell you what, you guys all, thanks for coming on the show. Quick shout out about some special events right now going on in the East Village and Lower East Side. If you're visiting New York, Liquid Lent, I think it's 47 days of beer. There's seven establishments: Burp Castle, Jimmy's Number 43, ABC Beer Company, Malt and Mold, Top Hops, and Eastwood and DBA East Village. The good part was I visited all of them yesterday, and I drank beers at each of them. It's hashtag Liquid Lent. But, you know, everyone's got their Mardi Gras. I don't know what Mardi Gras is, but I'll tell you what. For me, Lent is how so many of the great beers that we love were made by the monks, from Doppelbox and Abbey Doubles and Triples. So if you really love beer, Lent is the time to drink good beer. And it's also like the end of winter, so you can drink your dark beers. Doubles, Doppelbox. What would you guys drink for Lent if you had to?
Hey, man, historically, the Doppelbox and the stronger beers were made by the monks for the fasting season because they wouldn't eat, but instead they would drink beer, and that was their caloric intake.
And shout out to our buddy at Bruvana. Check him out. Last year, he's the guy that lived in Lent on beer alone. Oh. So he inspired us.
There you go.
All right. Nice. And then another thing coming up, a lot of Heritage Radio Network hosts will be there, including Michael Harlan Turkel from the food scene, and me, Jimmy Carboni. It's the second annual New York City Hot Sauce Expo. And full disclosure, I'm a co-founder and producer. So that's the New York City Hot Sauce Expo. It's March 29th and 30th near Penn Station in Manhattan. 45 hot sauce vendors from around the country. Pretty cool event. A lot of things going on in New York City. And I'd like to thank our sponsors at GreatBrewers.com who helped to bring you this podcast tonight. Thanks to Dave, Kevin, Basil, and Clay for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Maggie Seiden and Justin Kennedy, our engineer, Evan DeVito. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.